And a very good morning to you. Welcome to Galway Talks on Wednesday the 20th of September with me, John Morley. Coming up on the show today, teacher-based assessment plans for Leaving Cert shelved over AI concerns. We look at safety with the HSA as they urge farmers to complete training ahead of new quad bike regulations. We look at yesterday at the National Ploughing Championships. It looked like an absolute washout. We look back on a charity bin walk which took place. A man from Newcastle joins us in studio. All that plus lots more coming up on the show today between now and 12 noon. If you want to get a comment into us, you can. Our text and WhatsApp number, that's 086 38 33 55 3. And we also have a big competition with Dubray. Stay tuned for all that plus lots more right here on Galway Talks. And a very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. John Morley in the hot seat for the next 3 days, taking over for Keith just for the next coming days as there is a bereavement in the family. We wish to extend all our sympathies to Joan on the passing of her father, Willie Andrews. May he rest in peace. If you do want to get a comment into us today, I've given you the text and WhatsApp number. You can also email us comments at goibayfm.ie. And Siobhan is on reception on 0917700077. And you can get a comment into the programme today. Now, though, I do want to get into the programme because we seen a breaking story there today. There was murmurs of it yesterday, but it's really broken this morning that teacher-based assessment plans for the Leaving Cert have been shelved over AI. So the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, has shelved plans to introduce teacher-based assessment as part of a revised senior cycle programme, blaming the advent of artificial intelligence technology for the change of plan. Revised curriculums in 7 Leaving Cert subjects due to be introduced in schools in 2 years' time will not now contain any element of teacher-based assessment, despite the fact that this was a key objective when plans for senior cycle reform were announced more than a year ago. It is a remarkable U-turn, and to discuss this further, I will be joined shortly by Daniel Hyland, the principal of Claren College, Athenry, and also by his deputy there, Susan McGann, who is the regional rep for the NAPD. But first, I'd like to welcome onto the line Professor of Computer Sciences at the University of Galway, Michael Madden. Michael, a very good morning to you.
Hello, good morning to you, John.
It's an extraordinary story that's broke this morning that teacher-based assessment plans for the Leaving Cert are going to be shelled over AI. You're quite an expert in this field. Give us your assessment of it, Michael.
Well, thank you, John. Yes, it is a remarkable story. I think it's a sensible thing that's been proposed. What Minister Foley appears to be saying is not necessarily completely cancelling teacher-based assessments, but that they're going to pause those plans while the State Exams Commission examines the role and impact of what's called generative AI in this teacher-based assessment. So I'm sure generative AI, what we would most people would refer to as ChatGPT, programs like that. I'm sure your listeners have some familiarity with things like ChatGPT. What it can do is you can ask a question and it'll give, you know, quite extensive text answers. This is an AI system that has been trained on more or less all of the text from the internet, many textbooks, many novels, all sorts of information taken from the internet or anything that's kind of digitally available. And what it really is trying to do at a small level, or at the most fundamental level, is just sort of, you know, complete sentences, or finish, carry on a conversation or carry on sentences. But because it's such a complicated, technically detailed AI model, and because it's been trained on sort of vast quantities of data, the text it generates just by trying to do an autocomplete sort of action is actually generally quite comprehensive and consistent and all of that sort of thing. And so, if anyone tries using something like ChatGPT, you can ask it a question. So, say, one of the subjects that the minister is talking about, including, or the subjects are biology, physics, chemistry, business, and some others. So if you were to ask in business, for example, about the difference between a sole trader and a limited company, ChatGPT would have no problem generating a nice, clean, coherent explanation of that. And the problem is, from a One of the problem is, from an educator perspective, is that sort of fairly original text. If you run it a second time, it'll get somewhat different text. It's definitely not, for example, a direct copy of the Wikipedia page that would explain the difference. So it's very hard at the moment for educators to detect whether a block of text handed up by a student is their own work, or is it generated by ChatGPT or similar kind of tools.
It's a big turnaround for the department, because the move to the new form leaving cert with teacher-based mm-hmm. assessment plans, it was a key component for the department as recently as back in February. So has more knowledge been brought out of AI technology since then that has, I suppose, scared probably the department, or made them just a bit nervous about pressing ahead with this?
Yes, absolutely. So, there's an organization called the National Academic Integrity Network that's part of QQI. That's the qualifications and quality authority of Ireland for education, and particularly at third level, but I suppose the informed policy at all levels. And they produce a set of recommendations on generative AI and ChatGPT in the past month or two. And, you know, those recommendations, one of the specific recommendations is that as soon as we can, all academics have to review all of their assessments and replace or modify any that might be completed satisfactorily by somebody using generative AI without really understanding the subject themselves. And so, you know, we're doing a lot of that at university level at the moment. And I suspect that's what's happened here, is that now at the State's Exams Commission is looking at that recommendation from the National Academic Integrity Network and applying that at secondary school level.
Do you fear that this may be moved into the Department of Further and Higher Education, and there may be rethinks in third level? Because we do know that there have been moves to have, as you said there, the likes of oral examinations for students instead of essays and submitted written pieces.
Yes, and I don't fear this. I think this is happening already. I think we're already ahead of the curve at this at university level. We're already very actively working on revising the implications of this. I suppose what's changed, you see, John, is recently enough, if you asked a student to write an essay about a topic, that was a reasonable way. What we're really trying to assess is, does a student actually understand material? And one way to test if somebody understands material is see, can they explain it? Can they write an essay about it? And so, you know, for a long time, we've assumed the ability to write a coherent essay explaining a subject is evidence that you understand the subject. But now, if you can generate a plausible-looking essay with AI in a way that doesn't directly, you know, give matches if you test it against things from the internet, obviously, if somebody had handed in a Wikipedia page, you'd be able to detect that there was a clone of things off the internet. But with generative AI, it's not as easy to detect. Tools are being built, but they're not working yet. So we're already doing this at university level. Already, a lot of universities have new guidelines that are saying things like maybe 60-70% of assessment has to be based now on the final examination, but more importantly than that, we're looking at how each individual academic is looking at how they do assessments and what people want to see. And I think this can be done at secondary level as well, is not just look at the output, you know, look at, you know, here's an essay a student handed up, but look for evidence of the student's work, you know, developing it, say a draft of the essay, refining that draft multiple times, maybe even presenting early parts of it and so on to the teacher, and then the final version. So rather than basing the marks on this final output of the work, look for this continuous effort, because obviously you don't get that continuous effort if you just use an AI tool to generate the essay for you.
Finally, could the problem be the solution? Because I know that AI is detectable.
Generative AI is hard to detect because it generates unique text, or it can generate unique text every time. Now, as academics and as people who work with using generative AI, you start to recognize its learning, its writing style, and you start to spot text that looks suspicious when you read student work. And that allows you to, for example, circle an area and say, okay, I'm going to ask the student about this area because I suspect this area might have been AI generated. So if we have an interview with the student or a normal kind of discussion of the work as we'd normally have with students, let's probe this area here to make sure that that's not just something that was pasted from AI. So it is hard to detect. The tools for detecting AI don't work that well yet. On the other hand, these companies like OpenAI that generates ChatGPT, they're doing a couple of things. One thing is called watermarking, where they try to make subtle changes to the text in a way that they can recognize it was generated themselves, or possibly even just store all of the outputs they've generated as part of the tool, then that, you know, if I've got a new piece of text, I can check whether it's something that was previously generated. So tools are being developed, but they're not working very well yet. But probably in time, AI will be part of the solution as well as part of the problem.
All right. Professor Michael Madden of the University of Galway, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
No problem. Thank you, John.
I want to go to my other phone line now because I'm joined on the line by Daniel Hyland, who's the principal of Clarin College in Athenry, and also by Susan McGann, who's the deputy principal of Clarin College, Athenry, and also the regional rep for the NAPD, the National Association for Principals and Deputy Principals. You're both very welcome onto the programme today. Susan, I might start with you first, though. Give me your reaction to this reversal of plans by the Department of Education.
Good morning. I do think, we're in a digital era now, which is radically different from the industrial world that the senior cycle was designed for. I think it's a wise move by the department this morning. As we know, AI is advancing rapidly and is now very accessible to all. AI has its advantages, as Michael pointed out there, but it also has some challenges. So there's certainly a piece of development to be done there and on how to use AI responsibly and ethically.
Absolutely. Daniel, I might go to you now. This is one of a number of rollbacks by the department in terms of the leaving cert cycle over the past few months. I suppose it's one that's welcomed by teachers and will be welcomed by teachers' unions as well, just hot off the press this morning.
I suspect it will be because, from their experience of engaging with calculated grades and accredited grades, teachers have a professional reservation about assessing their own students, and that is actually coming from a good place. They're afraid of their positive disposition toward their students would kind of have a bias, mark the students as best they possibly can within a professional framework, of course. So I think there's probably a sigh of relief there in the teacher unions and across the teaching professional network. But I'm not sure it's fair to say that this is a reversal. Michael did mention there that the academic regulatory frameworks or the regulatory councils there that would have kind of expressed concerns to state exams around the integrity of the assessment process. I think that would have, forced and wisely the state exams, the Department of Education decided we need to pause because realistically, and I actually engaged with Michael on this last February when, ChatGPT was released. I know it was just before Christmas, but it started to become widely known and widely applied around that time. And we had a discussion around, the potential challenges in it. And there's a big piece of work there to be done with developing the professional space for teachers around the ethical use of AI. And also getting students to use AI ethically as well. And one other piece there that, the state exams in the last 2 years have engaged in a fairly significant project to move to online technology-based assessment. And for the most part, as I understand it anecdotally, that system has worked really, really well. So it's not that they're afraid of it, it's just that they're being cautious around it. Because one of the key things around assessment is that it has to be valid, reliable. And assessment is about measuring learning. And if AI is used unethically, then it's not fair to other students who didn't use AI in their state exams, in the state exams piece. So I think it's a wise move on reflection.
Now, it's part of a lot of changes that are happening in the Department of Education and for the Leaving Cert cycle as well. Susan, there's new specifications in seven subjects were due to be piloted in a small number of schools next year before being adopted more broadly 3 years later, but that's now being skipped and the new specification will be introduced across the board 2 years earlier than planned in 2025. That'll present challenges for schools to adapt quickly to it.
Well, I do. There does need to be more engagement with stakeholders there to ensure that our students are at the centre of all that's being done here, because that's the main part of it here. We need to make sure that there is that the specifications are applicable and practical for classroom settings. We also need, as Daniel was saying there, a piece of work needs to be done on assessment designs, and I agree with Michael on that as well. How are the students going to be assessed? What are the specifications going to be like? These need to be worked out in a classroom to make sure that the students are the focus and that they're not getting any undue stress due to, say, hiccups that might happen on that. So there does need to be a little bit more engagement there with stakeholders on that.
I think as well, John, I think the key piece here is this is an evolving space, and a lot of what happened there in terms of the what would have been seen as a reversal of the public with, you know, splitting paper one across 50 and 60.
Yeah.
The head of the policy unit, the curriculum policy unit within the department, they engage robustly with stakeholders. I was part of one of the consultations at ETBI, and a lot of the principals and deputies who were there, who are Irish teachers and English teachers originally, made very valid arguments to why the system wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So to be fair, they listened. And always, now there's always a piece there when you hear teacher unions are resisting something, but there's genuine reasons for that. And regardless of the significant effort that goes into refining resources for teaching and professional development, teachers keep students to the centre. And all change has to be sustainable and practical for teachers as well, if we're to keep students at the centre.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on there. And I think for the most part, it might appear like it's rehearsals, but actually it's evidence of listening. Mm. And to be fair, they've learned the lessons from Junior Cycle Framework. The department have learned those lessons. And if they had a fixed mindset and kept going ahead with these changes without being aware of what's going on around them, then we would have bigger problems in the long run. And our second years and first years who are going to experience this new Leaving Cert would suffer as a consequence. And remember, if we go back to what happened with the Junior Cycle Framework and the challenges there, particularly in Bond secondary schools, when the ASGI put up this significant resistance to it for their reasons, you know, it was a difficult space for the two different schools and different sectors. So that wasn't fair on the students, the teachers, or the individual schools. Mm-hmm. And there were reasons for that. So I think there's wisdom in this.
Yeah. And there are two brand new subjects to be phased in from 2025, starting a small number of schools, climate action, sustainable development, and also drama, film and theatre studies. The second one there, drama, film and theatre studies, that may prove, I suppose, difficult for schools in terms of resources for that, or if it is a very practical type of subject.
The learning spaces depends on what the specification is, so I can't really comment. But if they're really racist, there's obviously going to be a classroom based component to it. But the big challenge for schools going forward with the population bulge that's coming from primary schools is, will we have actually learning spaces for just traditional teaching and learning, never mind the innovative ones that need to come in, and it's important that we embrace them. So there's a significant piece of work to be done around that across the whole system.
The other part of that there, John, is that, you know, the department have coordinated well the, you know, bringing in new subjects in the past as well. So there is a model of good practice there. So it's just to make sure that the teachers receive the in-service training that they need, and to ensure that schools are engaged with as well, to make sure that the learning spaces are there, so that we can provide the curriculum in a correct way for our students.
And when you read in behind the headlines, the devil will be in the detail. And as I said before, I think this is going to be an evolving space, and we look forward and we're ready to take it on when it does come.
Just a final one for you, Daniel. A text coming into us there asking when the school will be reverting back to the lunch breaks he had before COVID. I think it's coming from one of the parents at school.
That's a decision for the school and school management. And I think I will look at that question in so far as we have now 1,020 pupils in the school. We have general general purpose area of that would hold 300 people. And if you were to put 1,000 pupils down that area, they would not have time to enjoy their lunch.
Well, it's fair. It's a question I just sprung on you, and you answered, in fairness to you. Daniel Hyland, the principal of Clarin College, Athenry, and Susan McGann, the deputy principal of Clarin College, Athenry, and regional rep for the NAPD. Thank you both very much for joining us yet again on Galway Talks. What is your reaction to that story? Let us know. 086 38 33 553. That's our text and WhatsApp number. You can phone us on 0917700077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We're looking at safety with quad bikes after these. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Now, I want to move on because we're talking all things safety with the HSA Senior Inspector, Pat Griffin, because the HSA is urging farmers to complete training ahead of the new quad bike regulations that are coming into effect on November the 20th. Pat, good morning.
Morning, John. How are you?
Are you down there in the ploughing today?
Yeah, I'm down here at the HSA stand, and we hope people will come and visit us and see what we've got here on offer.
Tell us about these regulations that you're looking to educate farmers on ahead of the 20th of November.
Yeah, well, we've been tracking the fatalities in farming for many, many years. And sadly, over the last decade, last 10 years, we've 191 people killed on Irish farms. And 10 of those have been killed off quad bikes. And when you think of the number of quad bikes in the country, it makes the quad bike actually the most dangerous piece of equipment that farmers use. So we brought in regulations, and the regulations require training and the wearing of a helmet.
Okay. And the quad bike itself, it's used by a number of farmers. It's a handy bit of equipment for farmers. And I suppose the demographic and age group that use quad bikes, does it tend to be younger, and does that have an impact on injuries and stuff like that in terms of these statistics you're quoting?
Well, they're a very useful piece of equipment, and I think most dairy farms and a lot of sheep farmers have quads now. They're very easy to operate, but they're also very, very easy to overturn. And people don't really understand why these quad bikes overturn, and it's only through training that they're going to learn that. And in relation to demographics, it's generally inexperienced people, but older people as well. If we look at the fatalities over that period, 75% of those killed off quad bikes were actually over the age of 60.
Okay.
And that points to something that's called active riding on a quad bike, where you need to practice active riding, where you move your body weight forward in the seat when you're going uphill, and you move to the very back of the seat when you're going downhill. And that's why the seat is so big, to allow the body movement around the quad. But a lot of people don't understand that. But when you get over, you know, into your elderly years, sometimes you won't have the strength to pull yourself up to the very front of the quad bike. And therefore, when you're going up a hill and you can't get to the front of the quad bike to maintain stability, you can overturn it very, very easily. So we really want to get farmers, and particularly very older farmers that are possibly using quad bikes, to understand those risks.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're located there in the ploughing in Block 2, Row 22, Stand 347. What exactly are you demonstrating? Are you able to give a demonstration, or are the quads going to sink into the ground?
No, the ground here at our stand is quite good, and we've got a mound of soil where the quad bike is driven over. We've got excellent demonstrators. They're explaining the risks of the quad bike going uphill and going downhill on side slopes, and also demonstrating the attachments and various things that can actually turn over the quad in its use. So our demonstration is excellent, and we're also doing a demonstration on blind spots around the tractor. And the reason we're doing that is the tractor and the quad, and maybe teleporters as well, have killed 100 people in the last 10 years. And it's generally in farmyards where people are hit by these machines in blind spots, and we're demonstrating the blind spots around the tractor, and that's going very well, because the operator of the tractor is actually, what he sees has been projected up onto a large screen, and a lot of farmers are very, very surprised at the amount of blind spots around the tractor. And the overall message, I think, is that if you are operating large machinery in a farmyard with all these blind spots that are changing all the time because the machine is changing, you really have to make a rule that people don't walk through the farmyard when there's large equipment working. They have to make eye contact with the driver and ask the driver to stop and turn off the machine before they walk through the yard.
Yeah. It's a very important message, I suppose, particularly when we're going into the autumn and then into the winter, and the nights will be getting longer and be getting darker quicker, to be so careful in the yard, which a lot of families in that they might know very well, but it's just to be so careful.
Yeah, it is a time for looking at what the lighting situation is in the yard and making sure that you've got adequate lighting. And if you're going up through fields herding cattle or bringing in cows, you really need to know where your ESB poles are, our telegraph poles, because a few fatalities have happened where people have actually hit these poles and then, not wearing a helmet, they actually have a head injury. And that brings me back to quad bike helmets. If we look at all the fatalities that have happened with quad bikes, a good proportion of those would have been prevented if people were wearing a helmet. So there is a grant aid there at the moment from the Department of Agriculture where farmers can actually purchase 4 PTO guards and 2 helmets, and they'll get 60% grant back on all those. So we would encourage farmers to get their helmets, get their quad guard or their PTO guards, and get that rebate of 60%. It'll be money very, very well spent.
Absolutely, it's good advice. Pat Griffin, the HSA Senior Inspector, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. And they get more details on hsa.ie/quadbikes.
Yes, thanks very much.
Thanks, Pat, and enjoy day 2 of the ploughing. Of course, tomorrow is the third and final day of the ploughing, so we wish all those heading down to Rathniska very well on their journey. But another man who is at the ploughing is our very own agricultural correspondent, Keith Fahey. Keith was, of course, speaking to the other Keith yesterday about day 1 of the ploughing, and I said I'd better check in on him and see how he got on day 1 of the ploughing championships, because it looked like an absolute mudfest. I think I heard someone on our local news saying if you were trading in mud that you'd be a millionaire. Keith, good morning. How did you get on yesterday?
Good morning, John. We dried out a small bit anyways since we were talking to you yesterday morning. It was a great day. Fantastic stands, a lot of people. Numbers seem to be back a little bit. I think 60,000 possibly, John, was the number I seen recorded yesterday. And I think 287,000 people went last year. So numbers probably are back a little bit. The ground conditions are very poor, to be fair. And wellies are definitely a necessity. But that didn't stop. I seen a few young lads rolling around in the muck and they were happy out. It didn't stop. A lot of people are happy to be out. And sure, you know yourself, John, farmers aren't afraid of the weather anyway. So it'll take a lot more than rain to stop farmers from going to the ploughing.
Absolutely. There must have been a great sale of boats yesterday.
There must have been, yeah, and Wellingtons and pull-ups and jackets, I'd imagine. But I felt sorry for the poor lad that was selling ice cream at the ploughing yesterday. Now he had his ice cream van there, and I passed him twice, and he wasn't very busy selling ice cream yesterday. Now, unfortunately, not a great place or great day to be selling ice cream. But the guys in selling the pull-ups, all right, were doing a lot better than he was. But look, that's Irish weather. Free, I suppose, John.
And there's a big Galway contingent down there in Rathniska, Keith.
Oh, massive Galway contingent. Last year on Country Life, we had John Concannon, JFC, and we had the Earls from Easy Fix there as well. And they have 2 massive stands there again this year. Fantastic stands, and definitely well worth seeing there with all the different products. And great to see Galway companies, John, doing so well. We spoke also to Mike Devaney there as well yesterday from Heptagon Houses, who has timber frame houses there for growing your own fruit, veg and salads. It's great to see a Cora Finn man coming up with a brilliant idea. It's very sustainable. All the timbers come from Carnamona and the EEC there, or ECC, sorry. And, Galway-based timber there. And then they have the UV-treated surrounds there, which is, you can see through it. It's UV-treated and to create more heat inside as well. So, and you can collect the rainwater from them as well. So he was on Country Life with us yesterday, so it was great to see. He's flying it there, and even while we were talking to him, there was a lot of different people came in, and one guy in particular came in, and he's 2 of them bought already. So a lot of people, if anyone is interested there, they can be seen at heptagonhouses.com, I think, or .ie is the website there. And we also spoke to Rory Keneally there from Graf there, another Milltown based, it's a German company, but they're the Galway based section there. there for the rainwater harvesting. So obviously, you know, very important. We get a lot of rain and a lot of it isn't collected, as you're aware. And so great to see. He said he's gotten a lot of inquiries from farmers, you know, in collecting rainwater from roofs to be used for maybe cattle, sheep. He also had a chicken farmer into him, whereby obviously they have a massive demand for water for power washing sheds after they've been cleared out for their new batch. So, and they also do a percolation and water treatment system there as well, John. So, yeah, definitely. And maybe speaking of Galway there, we also had Martin Ward on. Martin was promoting this Friday in Nathenry, the show and sale for the Galway Sheep Society is on Friday. The show starts at 4 and the sale is at 6. And there is 20 ewes, 20 ewe hoggets, 60 ewe lambs, 11 hogget rams, 15 ram lambs, and they're all eligible for the new Acres Environmental Scheme there, so you get the rare breed payment on those. So the Galway sheep are obviously very easy care and quiet, and they're doing fantastic work there as well, John, which is great to see for the Galway wool. You know, we've seen a lot of the wool that's shoring off sheep. The very poor price to be got for it, bar the Galway wool, they're sending it off to Bradford there. There's a Bláthnaid Gallagher there and a couple of more for the Galway Wool Society, or good wool. And John Burke also, and he's from Woolo, so anyone interested in getting a Galway sheep wool pillow there, Woolo, he's an organic farmer, John, and he's selling pillows there based on Galway wool. So he's it's great to see the Galway Sheep Society doing so well as well.
That's great. Keith, thanks you for joining us this morning, and I'm glad that you've dried off from yesterday. Just a quick mention in here, people travelling to the National Ploughing Championships are being advised there could be delays in getting to the site due to a collision. Gardaí and emergency services are at the scene of a crash in Mullaghnard outside Mount Meelick in County Laois. Traffic has been diverted away from the R422, and motorists travelling to Rathnisca via this route for the ploughing may experience delays. I have another comment in saying, when can we bring our electrical stuff to the university to dispose of? That is tomorrow between 10 and 4. We had that on Ars to Protect last week. And also another call coming in from one of our listeners today. And it says, John, why do parents continue to have all very young children on tractors? It has to be addressed. And they keep coming in this morning. 086 38 33 55 3. That's our text and WhatsApp number, and that's brought to you by rationale.ie. We're looking at a charity fundraiser which took place very recently with a resident of Newcastle after these. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Now, I'm joined in studio by a character of characters. He was talking to Keith when he was doing his bin walk for charity, but Thomas Riley joins me in studio. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm very well. You completed the bin walk on the 7th of September. Remind our listeners of it. You went from Blackline and Cavan down to Cork pushing a bin.
Yeah, so it was 355 kilometres altogether. It took us 20 days, so just the guts of 3 weeks, but we did it for a great cause, so it was all worth the pain.
Absolutely, and you're based here in Newcastle in Galway City, and you were speaking to us as you were going through Portumna and the journey. Talk to us about the trials and tribulations of it. I know you've put yourself through hardship in the past as well, but you really went through the ringer on this one.
Yeah, so we went into it feeling pretty confident, like quite naive. And it was when, I say within the first 10 seconds, I pulled the bin up a hill and I thought, what the have I done? What have I done to me and my friends? But we kept on moving with it. And again, it was for a great cause. So that's what pushes you through.
Absolutely. And the difficulties of it, of course, it takes a physical toll on the body. How did that go?
Look, pain is artificial. When you get to a point with pain, it's artificial. You can move it to one side. It doesn't last. Like right now, my toenail is currently falling off from a blister consuming my toe. My feet are in a bad way. My arm's absolutely gone. My back still hurts. My knee hurts. And the two lads are pretty much in the same way.
Yeah, Christopher Maguire and Thomas Lynch, who did it with you. And the connection of you lads, do you live together or what's the connection?
So we all went to school together. We live in roughly about 6 miles away from each other. But we all went to school together and we've been hanging out since we were probably about 11, 12.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a Top Gear trio thing for us now at this point.
And when you go home now, do they make you put out the bins or?
We still put the bins out, you know. it's part of our blood now, I guess. We're the right men for it. You know, we know bins better than anyone.
I'll go back to being serious with you now, Thomas, because it is, as you said there, for a very, very good cause. And you've raised a lot of money so far.
Yeah, we're nearly at $6,000. So we're doing it for Cavan Monaghan Palliative Care System. This is a really important charity, I think, because I think everyone knows someone who's been in palliative care. Personally, myself, my granddad was in it 16 years ago and they looked after him great.
Yeah.
And if not, everyone goes down the same road. We all get old. So stuff like this in our communities and society is really useful. So it's important to help it and give it funds if you can.
And if people want to do that, it's GoFundMe, the bin walk from Cavan to Cork.
Yes, so you just go on GoFundMe, look it up, type in bin walk. And funny enough, we're the only bin walk on GoFundMe, so it's not hard to find. But if people could just donate, because we went through all that pain, the long walk, and if we could get to $6,000, that would mean a lot for us and obviously for the charity as well.
Yeah. Tell me about your background in education. I know history is your subject, and I think yourself and the two lads have etched yourselves into history now on more than one occasion.
Yeah, so we did a canoe trip from Cavan to Galway the summer previous, and we did that for Cuan Cancer in Cavan, and we raised nearly $3,000 for that. So yeah, we're slowly trying to reshape Irish history and get our names in there, and maybe one day people will follow us as well.
And finally, where is the bin residing now?
It's at the back of the house, Justin. It's going to be, I'm hoping one day to have grandkids and pull the sheet off it. And just quickly, John, I just want to give a quick shout out to people. Wilton Waste for giving us the bin. My cousin Donica, who fit the axle. Kevin Nugent at Mr. Waffle, who's going to give a significant sum towards the charity. And all the great people of Ireland. I just want to say that we got so much help. Ballygar GA, Carrick Navarre in Cork, John Maguire, all these people helped us out along the way.
And of course, Galway was your favourite county you walked through.
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%. I don't want to be giving shade to anyone, but Tipperary, get yourself sorted out.
Well, I'd say there's going to be a lot of Galway hurling supporters that will be donating to the GoFundMe after that statement. Thomas Riley, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Still to come on the programme, we'll be speaking with Maggie Woods after the news and sport at 10. Don't go anywhere. 086 38 33 553. That's our number, with thanks to rationale.ie.